The idea of a startup company can be more fantasy than reality. After all, 90% of all startups fail within their first 2 years. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton gets startup advice from experienced and successful marketing experts who have found success with startups. Navigating the choppy waters of starting a new company is now on Techonomics.
Marketing. It's a term that is often confused with branding or public relations or other things that are squishy. Marketing is not squishy until it needs to be. It is not a new logo on a product or an official statement from an airline during a PR crisis, although that last one does seem to be a cottage industry these days. Marketing is the study and application of real-life, successful business practices that help a company succeed in the marketplace. Catch that? Now, startups need access to proven business practices more than most companies. That's because 90% of all startups fail, usually quickly. Usually before they incorporate proven marketing practices into their life cycle. Well, two Silicon Valley marketing experts are here with a new book that lights a candle rather than curses darkness.
There are a lot of startups that have gone before us. There are a lot of mistakes. There's a way to avoid that by studying, you know, what's gone before. And I think the successful startup founders do bring advisors to the table early.
Carol Broadbent has more than 20 years in tech company startup experience, both as a vice president and as a consultant. Tom Hogan has more than 25 years of high-tech marketing experience, including positions as VP of corporate marketing at such companies as Oracle, Borland, Lucent, and Vital Signs Software. Here's part one of two of my chat with the authors.
Tom Hogan, Crowded Ocean, founder, partner.
Carol Broadbent, Crowded Ocean, co-founder, partner.
Well, thank you for coming in again, and I should just be transparent and say that we did this recording already, and it got corrupted, and you have been so gracious to come back in and do it with me again. We thought it was important to get some of this theory out there that is in your most recent book, and I'm going to give the title. It's kind of long, but it's kind of important because we're going to be keying off of it. The Ultimate Startup Guide, Marketing Lessons, War Stories, and Hard-Won Advice from Leading Venture Capitalists and Angel Investors. Great title, great book. Let's start with, how do you know you have a good idea? How do you know when somebody comes in with a startup and you say, yeah, that's a good idea? What's your first blush?
You know, from our standpoint, Jason, the biggest issue that we see is, are they connected with the market? And is there a real need that's out there? And what we find that with so many of our clients is that the solution is technology for technology's sake, that the engineers have had a great idea and they've challenged themselves and they've executed it. But they never checked in with the marketplace beforehand to find out if there was a need for that particular solution. So if we see that there's a big hole in the market and there's exciting new technology, that's the ideal fit.
When you're in that discovery phase with a potential client, what are you evaluating? What are you looking for beyond the idea that Tom just talked about? Is there anything else that kind of factors in for your decision making before you get into the strategy mode? And I'll start with you, Carol.
Yeah, no, the number one would be the team.
The team.
Absolutely. In fact, the venture capital firms and venture capital partners we work with regularly tell us that they, you know, invest in teams over technology. And I would say we do the same. So mm-hmm. when we're meeting with a new startup, it's really the guys at the top that, you know, sort of carry the day in terms of not only their vision, but their understanding of the customer pain. And their sort of conviction, you know, single-minded conviction that they've got a better approach. And that's the foundation of a new company.
I see. Okay. Confidence in the roster that's coming in, alongside the idea, of course, that Tom mentioned, right?
Okay. Exactly.
Okay, so those are the top two things. Now, some of the VCs I've had in here to talk with me, they always mention marketing coming in towards the end of, like, late seed, or maybe even after a couple of series of fundraising. When do you think, just as a 30,000-foot perspective, when do you think marketing should and could get involved in a company that would help it be successful?
Well, you know, we've got one VC who's very far-reaching. He's had an incredible track record, and he came to us one day and he said, you know what I want to do is something completely unique. He says, I want to build the company from the marketing workshop and from the press release that comes out of it, and then we're going to develop that product against what we do here at the workshop. Now, that's very unique.
Mm-hmm.
9 times out of 10, it's as you say, we're an afterthought. People sit there, they develop this incredible technology, and then they turn around and they go, damn, we need to find a way to bring it to market and start the sales.
Right.
And so we get brought in very late, and then we're having to, quite often, it's not that we have to do anything corrective, but we have to do a lot of really educating of technologists who think that their solution is so evident that they just need to roll it out.
Right.
And it will sell itself.
I've been to cocktail parties with engineers. They kind of be kind of rough. I'm just saying, it's like editing a spreadsheet sometimes as you're going through it, because they're not communicating. They just assume that you understand the elegance of their solution, right?
Yeah.
Isn't marketing communication? I mean, that's why I always think it should be brought ahead at the beginning of it. Is that a frustration point for you guys, or is it just something you've adapted to? Well, obviously, you've written a whole book about it, so.
Yes, we are very frustrated, as are some of the more, I don't know, insightful investors and CEOs, that they realize that if you can bring marketing upstream, that it can actually shorten the selling cycle and it can accelerate customer acquisition. And that is critical. But, you know, it's always a game of trade-offs when you're thinly funded. You're the founder. You're thinly
right.
funded. You have to prove your product market fit. You've got to sort of peanut butter your funding across so many priorities. So I think traditionally, as you say, traditionally marketing gets sort of pushed. But, yeah, there's that tension all the time. But bringing it upstream so that it's sort of built into the equation can really pay off for a team in terms of accelerating growth.
You mentioned a revenue aspect to pulling it forward, too. And I'm wondering, does that mean that you have to be creative in your compensation? Do you have to think about equity? Do you have to think about later stakes? Are you going to lock up? Or how does that work for you with working with startups? Because that might be the barrier to entry for a lot of VCs, because, like you said, they've got to spread thin across a lot of needs at the moment, right? And if you're a good startup, then you're always on a swivel.
Equity, yes. Do you mean like a cash equity trade-off?
Well, like we'll offer our services and our expertise and help you go to market with a strategy, and then we'll do some branding workshops later if you want to, for a 2% stake.
Oh, gotcha.
At a certain stake, if the company IPOs or whatever later in the round. Is that an opportunity, and is that a selling point for VCs too? Because they can, those insightful VCs who see marketing as important want to pull it upstream. They may not be able to write you the big check.
Yeah, I would say, you know, our business model is that we do take equity, that we're at the table as a shareholder advising the company, and that strengthens our position as advisors to the company, because we're making investments and recommendations as an independent advisor and a shareholder looking for the long run, not the cheap win. So that's the position we usually take when we're retained by a startup client or referred in by their VC partner investor. Absolutely. I do think the rules of the road, though, are that equity is a very precious commodity. So it's, you know, that trade-off is pretty tricky. You know, convincing somebody to give out more equity in exchange for cash is always challenging.
Yeah, I can imagine so. Again, it's the apple cart kind of situation, too, because the benefits that come from moving it upstream make so much more sense to me. Anyway.
Well, the really successful startups that we've had the good fortune of working with do surround themselves with kind of an ecosystem of advisors, whether that's technology advisors or sales channel advisors or marketing advisors like us, to stand on the shoulders of giants, to quote, you know, a cliche there. But there are a lot of startups that have gone before us. There are a lot of mistakes. There's a way to avoid that by studying, you know, what's gone before. And I think the successful startup founders do bring advisors to the table early.
It's funny you mentioned studies, because case studies are so important to marketing firms and marketing strategies, you know, benefiting from what has gone before, right?
Right.
Why is it so hard to communicate that? Why don't some VCs and CEOs and founders see that from the very beginning and say, we tried this once, see, this is the case study, and they still seem resistant to that? Do you have to sell that in the room?
I think the big issue, yeah, the scar tissue doesn't seem to apply. There's a hubris to most of the founders who say, I know that that happened to them, but it won't happen to me. It's like building your own house. Yes, you know, you were 2 years late, but that won't happen to me because I'm a strong project manager, and then they're 2 years late.
Right.
You know, but I think the big issue is that, as Carol said, if we take equity, and we try and take equity with everyone, it allows us, another cliche, to speak truth to power.
Right.
We sit there and say, listen, the only reason we're telling you to pay this extra amount and bring your PR firm in a month earlier is it's going to wind up being a long-term benefit.
Right.
We want you to get rich so that we can get a little rich when we get the exit here, and that's why we're recommending this to you. Even though it might not have the short-term pop that you want, the long-term benefits are too self-evident based on our experience for us not to make this recommendation.
So to borrow analogies, my turn to use an analogy, okay? Mm-hmm. Instead of building the airplane while you're flying it, you're encouraging them to build the runway.
Yeah. In fact, we've got an even since we're dealing in hoary cliches, we'll go one more further on you and say, basically, we tell people, listen, it's a hell of a lot cheaper to fix your boat in dry dock, which would be like a workshop before you go, than to put it in the water. It's still cheaper to do it in the water, but in the harbor,
right,
than it is out in the open ocean.
Right.
You try and fix your boat in the open ocean, you're screwed.
Yeah.
That's called a pivot, you know, and that is almost fatal. But so the idea is, as you're saying, if you can do it as completely upstream, which is what we often do when we bring in the workshop before we've named the product or the company or whatever, you're in dry dock and you can do it when it's still able to affect some real significant benefits. But worst case, still don't get out in the open sea and then say, let's bring marketing in, right, because you'll just fail.
Yeah, that's not a tack. That's a sink.
Yeah.
Right. That was part one of my chat with Carol Broadbent and Tom Hogan. They are tech company marketing experts. They've also co-authored a new book, The Ultimate Startup Guide: Marketing Lessons, War Stories, and Hard-Won Advice from Leading Venture Capitalists and Angel Investors. And given what's in the pages, that subtitle is really warranted. There are links at kgoradio.com/techonomics. All of our podcasts are there too, including part two of this interview with Carol and Tom. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.